No, ma is normal simply by sorry, but am having a problem with the consent to recall the screen, but okay. Everything seems fine now. And I was saying that the trend associated with the quasar main sequence can help us to define what is normal for the type one quasar. And of course, there is an intertwined question to the one now, what is peculiar? And it is where to look for finding efficiently peculiar types of profiles that may be revealing of a particular structure over the emitting region. And in the end, after discussing several cases of peculiar emissions, I will try to spend a few minutes about open issues and remaining questions. So let me introduce with a few words the quasar main sequence. And the main sequence is defined basically by an anti-correlation between the strength of a singly ionized ion emission and the width of H beta. Here we have a diagram with the full width at maximum of H beta versus a parameter defined by the intensity ratio of the FE2 blend right at the blue side of H beta and the intensity of H beta itself. The FE2 emission is a very, very important parameter because FE2 particularly is emitted over an extremely broad range in wavelengths. So it is one of the main coolants of the emitting region and can dominate the thermal balance of the low ionization part of the broadband region. The full width at maximum of H beta is, of course, related to the velocity field of the low ionization part of the emitting region, and it is affected also by orientation effect. We think that it is a measurement associated with virial velocity field that is probably the main broadening source for H beta. So here we have a representation of two zones that are being separated, and it has been found that basically the separation is associated with a physical mean, that is the well-defined full width at maximum limit is leading to a separation in terms of Eddington ratio with what is called a population A below 4,000 kilometers per second is emitting at a higher Eddington ratio. And what is called population B is systematically at lower accretion rate. The difference in Eddington ratio is ultimately related also to a difference in accretion mode. We have for population A sources the possibility of radiation pressure supported accretion disk, LIM or TIC. We have that radiation forces can induce a strong wind, while for population B sources, we have that many data fit a more conventional scenario associated with an accretion disk, a standard alpha disk, geometrically thin and optically thick. The importance of the main sequence stem also from the fact that the simple correlation shown in the previous slide is also related to multi-frequency parameters that are correlated with the trend. and multi-frequency parameters that are related to the creation process and the accompanying outflows that seem to be ubiquitous among quasars. So now to define what is normal, we can subdivide the sequence into spectral beams, and we can see that there is basically an obvious trend concerning the H-beta line profile. We pass from relatively narrow and spiky profile, which are well fit by a Lorentzian function, to broader profile, which are more Gaussian-like and well fit by the sum of a Gaussian, a narrower Gaussian, and a broader Gaussian that is accounting for the redward asymmetry that seem to be a defining properties of population B. And we can do better. And so we can subdivide the main sequence, the part in which FE2 emission is fainter, into slice of 1,000 kilometers per second in full Vitas maximum H beta, and test various models for the H beta line profile. Here we see that particularly the Lorentzian function provides the best fit in terms of a chi square up to about 4,000 kilometers per second, while above, again, as hinted in the previous slide, we obtain that a double Gaussian is more appropriate for population B. Against other model, Voigt, a combination of Gaussian and Voigt, that are apparently very, very much disfavored for the narrowest profile in population A. And what we see is that well, first of all, the distinction between population A and population B in terms of line profile is preserved also going to very high luminosity. Here on the left, we see composite spectra in beams of luminosity covering particularly the luminosities proper for the most luminous quasars observed in the universe. And we can see that the dichotomy Lorentzian double Gaussian is preserved. And if we compare a higher ionization line, and in the case always of the most luminous quasars, we see that particularly the profile of H beta is preserved in its shape, Lorentzian double Gaussian, while the high ionization line show a sort of kinematical decoupling from H beta with a very strong excess on the blue side. So, and this is the observational basis for the interpretation of two systems of emission, one associated with the higher ionization line, probably in a bipolar outflow, for which the receding side is obscured, and one associated with lower ionization emission, predominantly Keplerian, in a flattened configuration. So now going to the population B sources and attempting to understand what is the origin of the strong redward asymmetry that we have observed. Well, let me say that there are several explanations. The strongest ones that have been proposed seem to be gravitational redshift and infalling gas plus obscuration mirroring the blue shifted emission that has been proposed for outflowing high ionization gas. Well, gravitational redshift has some strong point, and basically it is inversely proportional to the radius, and in the case of virial velocity field, we expect that the redshift should increase with increasing line velocity, giving naturally rise to the kind of redward asymmetric profile that we observe in population B source. And so if we ask now for the first time, so in this context of the mean sequence, what is peculiar? we can consider one object that has attracted very much attention. And this object shows a red border symmetry that is very, very striking. And however, if we check the values of the red border displacement, for instance, computing the centroid at 1/4 intensity, we see that we have 2500 kilometers per second of displacement, which is an extreme values, but not extremely peculiar, because most of population B sources have redshifted displacement of the centroid between 1,000 and 2,000 kilometers per second. So this source, from the point of view of the H beta profile in the context of population B, is not peculiar. And if we look again at population B sources, now we can afford perhaps a little bit of an excursus. Recall that back in 1989, Jack Stulentich defined several spectral shapes with a code. AR, R means a symmetry to the red with red peak displacement, which seemed to be the typical population B profile. But he identified also sources with a sort of goiter that we see close to the peak of the H beta line as RB. The sources were a little bit of an oddity. Now, if we compare, however, the composite spectra of H beta to the profile of oxygen 3, we can see that the goiter phenomenon seems to increase with the luminosity, and that it can be explained by fitting simultaneously in a self-consistent way oxygen 3 and H beta, and this feature seems to be associated with the blue shifted component of oxygen 3 related to the outflow in the innermost part of the nebulae region. And this seems to be true also for the most extreme cases of high luminosity, which this kind of profile that has been considered as sort of a suggestion for binarity is, as a matter of fact, more readily explainable by a combination of the standard H beta profile and an outflowing component. So, going back to the peculiar cases, I think that there are two objects that attracted attention since a long time, and so called Twin Peaks object. One of them is Arakelian 120. And for this object, there have been a lot of speculation. And since the very beginning, the profile seemed to suggest a sort of reproducible phenomenon, because we can see in two objects basically the same aspect of the profile. And it was described to peculiar two-dimension variable accretion disk emission, binary black hole. And now a recent monitoring campaign suggested a periodicity of about 20 years. And the periodicity is still under discussion, especially its nature. However, we cannot pass completely over to the fact that at the continuum of flux, in correspondence of the strongest continuum flux, there seems to be a broadening of the H beta profile. And that is a sort of phenomenology that is seen more preferentially in radioloud sources. However, going on with the peculiar profile, so we have seen what the typical population B source profile should be for H beta. Now, the discovery of a shifted peak by thousands of kilometers per second, which are 1%, of population B samples is a surprise in a realized system in which the profile should be reasonably symmetric and unshifted. So several explanations of the shifted peak were provided: optically thick outflow, rotating bright spot, and perhaps an interesting possibility is the one of warp disk that can give quite naturally model profiles that account for highly shifted peaks. And going back to the question where to look for a peculiar profile, we can focus on the extreme part of population B, where we have the broadest profiles and where F2 emission is faintest. And we expect that the sources include highly inclined cases. However, we find something that is intrinsic and 50% prevalence of high accretion rate. And we think that they are low RFE, so low accretion rate. And there is also the remarkable fact that there is a very high prevalence of peculiar profile. Two examples are shown here of both blue-shifted and red-shifted peak displacement. Now, this is B1++ extreme population B is also where candidate accretion disks are found. And in the general population of quasars, they are very, very few, but they are basically overabundant in this region of the main sequence. And the prototypical source is ARF102B that has been fitted very successfully from employing an accretion disk profile. And usually for the sources, as I said, we have a very low accretion rate, much lower than the one of typical AGN. And now the sources are being discovered with increasing frequency by IFU spectroscopy, because IFU spectroscopy is very efficient in detecting broad emission that is very faint above contamination by a stellar continuum. So very faint AGN at low identity ratio are now being found with this kind of profile. And let's say that basically the explanation of the accretion disk find a confirmation if one considers the displacement along the region of low identity ratio because of the effects of viewing angle. At some point, we reach almost face-on sources, which are blazers, and for blazers, it is possible to fit basically an accretion disk profile at zero inclination angle. And here we see an example with an impressive redwood asymmetry, and this redwood asymmetry is favored by the very low Eddington ratio and by the UV photon deficit that is typical of radioloud sources, in which really there is not enough photons to be able to emit, to produce emission of lines at a distance from the central continuum source that is typical of the other AGN. So particularly in this case, the emission is more concentrated closer to the central black hole, and so the effect of gravitation shift is also strong. And about double peaked profile, I must say that to explain the variability of the peak, I won't call them epicycle, but additional complication have been introduced. So elliptical accretion disks have been able to reproduce for a period of several years the variability of NGC 1097, And however, some recent discoveries of very broad profile are not consistent with the disk and claim for other phenomena such as tidal disruption of objects by the gravity of the central black hole or other complications. And however, let me say that about binary black hole, the issue is still open. They are predicted on about 10% of AGN. And however, they are very, very difficult to find. And unfortunately, the periodic displacement of the peak that have been studied for candidate binary black hole didn't live up very much to the expectation. So basically the strong prediction of a binary black hole is about the presence of the an acceleration that should be consistent over time. And in the lack of this acceleration, basically the equation, the second equation here, puts a lower limit to the mass, and if the lack of detectable acceleration goes on for many years, then the mass of the central black hole will reach a reasonable value. So here we have appeared at the best case in which a displacement of a bump has been traced, suggesting a binary orbit for NGC 4151. And there are other form of phenomenologies. Here we see the pictorial case in which there was the transition from a single peaked profile to a double peaked one. So a sort of broadening that has been seen also in 3C54.3, and that calls periods for a different kind of phenomenology associated with the radio jet. We can see here that the difference is suggestive also of a sort of bipolar outflow that has been started with increasing luminosity. And this reminds to the most dramatic cases of changes, the changing look AGN, in which we have almost disappearance or appearance of Brock component. And one of the most enigmatic facts is the appearance in NGC 1566, shown on the right plot, of a FFO emission following the substantial increase in luminosity. Or better said, the vice versa, following a substantial decrease in luminosity, there was a complete disappearance of FE2. But I think that also the converse has been found. So basically, what changing look AGN are, if we look at the mass luminosity diagram, we see that they are associated with a transition between very low or quiescent state to moderate accretion state. So a transition in terms of accretion rate and accretion disk structure from an ADAF dominated emission to emission in which there is a contribution of a geometrically thin optically thick accretion disk. Up to now, I have not seen any case in which there is a transition between a population B and a population A source in which we pass from a geometrically thin optically thick to a geometrically thick radiation pressure supported disk. So in conclusion, let me say that the trends of the eigenvector one main sequence define a typical line profile phenomenology. They are the definition of the norm. And peculiar means a single shifted peak or very broad or multiple peaks profile. And where to look, where we want to find extreme peculiar profile, we should look toward extreme population B. High prevalence is of irregular profile is seen in this case. And not all of them are explained by accretion discrimination. However, the binarity is hard to prove from the analysis of the line profile. And in principle, well, what until now the data should suggest us is mainly a sort of stochastic process associated with accretion disk emission. So, and let me spend 2 minutes more posing a few open questions about the meaning of what has been summarized. True that periodic and quasi-periodic signals are detected, but do they have a physical origin? I'm inclined to answer yes, because I think that the simplest representation of the accretion disk as an isolated entity around a black hole is a little bit unrealistic. There must be a compact object orbiting, and situation might be most likely much more complex. And another issue that seems to me important is, where are the dual AGN, and what is the merging fraction in radio loud? Some studies find a very high frequency of radio loud in mergers and strongly interacting systems. But we really don't know what is the meaning of it. And another thing that is interesting is the issue of gravitational redshift. And now that we think this phenomenon is operating, it will be important to develop more the effect of gravitational redshift in the Kerr metric. And I think that the trend in profile in changing look AGN are really interesting. They look like they provide information, diagnostic information on the dynamics in this transient state. And also the appearance of a fit emission should be further analyzed. And in the end, I think that there could be a difference between radio quiet and radio loud sources because of a sort of a specific jetted radio loud phenomenology suggested by Pictorey and other sources. Thank you very much for your attention.
So I open the lecture for questions and comments. Do we have someone from the online participants to ask Paola a comment?
I think that I'm gonna...
If not from online, I ask people from hall. I have now Dragana. Dragana, please.
Can you hear me well?
Not very well, but please try.
I'm going to try my best. So thank you very much, Paola, for this very nice overview, very nice presentation of both the broad language of physics and kinematics, and especially where to look to find the answers. I totally agree with you, this extreme population B is the place to check to try to find the answer. And my peculiar question is related to these transient profiles in terms of iron emission. If you can go back to your slide. Yes, there. So here to the right, you are showing which object?
NGC 1566.
Ah, yes. Okay. Yes. And there you pose this question about the appearance of iron mine. Disappearance? And
well, it disappeared from 2018. 2019 is in that year.
And can you comment on what do you think is the origin of this transition?
Well, I think that if we look at the sort of correlation that we have found in eigenvector 1, apart from some transient state in which you may have a T2 emission that is disproportionately strong with respect to H beta, basically an increase in luminosity, which means for a single object an increase in Eddington ratio, should give you a stronger T2 emission. And I think that this behavior is, the one shown here is the converse, but is consistent still with the expectation of the eigenvector 1 sequence.
Thank you very much.
Okay, do we have more questions from the call? Yes, we have.
Yeah, one question. How often do these occur, these changing in OKGNs? The ratio, the frequency of these changing look agents.
This is the optical part of the spectrum.
I don't know how often that they appear.
It's a question. It's a question because we have some objects that they show some kind of quasi-periodicity or periodicity that we have like switch on, switch off activity. But in principle, we are not sure that there is some rule or that we have periodicity. It means this galaxy, we observe it first was observed by Carl Seyfert, if I remember well. I'm right, yes. And was with broad lines, this LGC 3516. And then from some France astronomers in the 10 or to 20 years after that, showed that no so big continuum and narrow lines. And now in 90s, some example, it was with the bright continuum and very broad lines that somewhere in 2014, I think somewhere, they're gonna explore it and publish a paper. Also, we published with the Shapovalova paper about it. The activity simply was on the minimum. And the galaxy showed the spectrum that is characteristic for safer two galaxies with narrow lines. And also very interesting that we found, especially Dragana's paper, is that there are corona lines very intensive. I'm right, Dragana, yes. So it means that we have no, confirmation that there is periodical event in switching on activity, but it's somewhere about several years, 10 years, something like that.
I think Santiago was asking more about the fraction of changing the population, like what
is fraction is small. Sorry, I understand. I understand the COVID period that you have between switch on and switch off.
Yes, that's what I wanted to comment. In principle, these events are very rare.
They could be much more common, but since you need to observe sources with high currents to catch into this stage, so it's going to return.
No, but even now,
probably much more than the actually observed.
We do surveys and everything, so it's not so common, but studies from photometric. And surveys. It means that the topic of dedicated survey would need to be used to confirm whether it's a changing local.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a very, very interesting topic.
Yeah, but if you have additional questions, if we have no more questions, then Paola, thank you once again. And we will stay here working, so if someone would like to have some presentation or questions for participants that they are here, please let us know. We can always communicate with this channel of Zoom. So thank you.